Over the next few months, more than 140,000 servicemen and women will return to their lives here in the United States, and more than 120,000 will go overseas to replace them. Mental health specialists are concerned. Thousands of veterans may return needing some form of treatment, and they say the government's medical system might have trouble providing that help. NPR's Daniel Zwerdling reports.
They say they don't want to sound alarmist. They don't want to exaggerate the potential problem. But mental health specialists are worried that thousands of young men and women who come back from the war might wind up in a place like this.
Next, Mr. Jefferson.
This is a clinic for drug addicts, and every patient here is a veteran. Okay. As many as 400 addicts line up in this linoleum hallway on a typical morning in downtown Baltimore, Maryland. Everybody just calls it the VA. The patients get called one by one to the pharmacy window.
Okay, next.
And the technician fills a small plastic bottle with a pinkish liquid. This is their legal fix.
This is the methadone liquid for narcotic addiction.
Most of these addicts left the military years ago. A lot of them fought in Vietnam. They say they started popping pills, shooting heroin. They took anything to try to forget what they'd seen. Some got addicted by accident.
My name is Mike, and I was an infantryman in Vietnam. I was an M60 machine gunner for an infantry platoon, and we were ambushed with mortars, small arms fire, and RPGs, rocket-propelled grenades. I was wounded, and I started having severe headaches, and I got addicted to prescription medication.
Prescription?
Yes.
Doctors say it's not uncommon for soldiers who've been in combat to get addicted to alcohol or drugs. Sonia Batten is one of the staff psychologists. She says the clinic is starting to get younger vets who served overseas in the 1990s.
Our demographic seems to be changing a little bit. For a long time, it was primarily Vietnam veterans. And while that's still the majority, we're getting a lot more people from Bosnia, from Somalia, from Gulf War I. And so I've really seen a shift just over the past 6 months in terms of who the people are who are coming in for treatment right now.
The doctors here are feeling nervous about what's going to happen next. They say this clinic is treating four times as many addicts as it did just a few years ago. They have a waiting list of vets who are trying to get in. And so they're wondering, when the troops start showing up from the latest war, will they have the money and staff to help them? Some researchers say, don't worry.
The Iraqi vets coming back from Iraq, what can be said is that they never will have had it so good.
Robert Rosenheck studies mental health issues at Yale University Medical School. Rosenheck says the medical system for vets today, mental health care for vets today, is light years better than it used to be. He says back in the days of the Vietnam War, doctors were puzzled when troops told them that they felt like they were going crazy.
The Vietnam veterans came back and nobody could acknowledge what they'd been through. These guys would come back and would be telling us this horrendous stuff. And we had no framework for thinking about it. We thought, is this schizophrenia? Is this what we call personality disorder? There was just no framework.
But then researchers did all kinds of studies, and they discovered that soldiers get what's now called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. In fact, surveys show that almost one-third of Vietnam vets got it. As a result, a lot of them got hooked on alcohol or drugs. They lost their jobs. They beat their spouses. Some ended up homeless or in prison. And so the government set up hundreds of centers around the country where vets with PTSD could get help. By now, things have changed so much that when the U.S. military invaded Iraq, it sent mental health teams to the battlefield so they can try to prevent PTSD in the first place.
I'm sure we're dealing with a core of people who are going to have some very, very serious problems. But the capacity of the system now, we're going to be able to, you know, take care of these. And if there's a problem, I am sure, there's just no question that the resources is there.
But a lot of government doctors say the resources are not there. They say, first of all, some troops are already having problems getting help while they're still in the military. One afternoon recently, I joined the director of a veterans group as he met with patients at Walter Reed Army Hospital here in Washington, D.C.
What's going on, man?
Steve Robinson was an Army Ranger in Iraq at the time of the first Gulf War. Now he wears a ponytail, and he runs a group called the National Gulf War Resource Center. He's come to talk with a few soldiers from the current war in one of the patients' rooms because they say they're in emotional trouble, and they're not getting the help they need. And they say there are others at this hospital like them.
They're the ones that wind up sitting in the room and they stay there for the entire time they're here.
I need to know who they are, or I need to figure out a way to give them contact information. You think if I made like a flyer?
Robinson and the soldiers say, in general, this hospital has a great staff, but understandably, the doctors are preoccupied with treating the most serious injuries. Walter Reed's where you come if your legs got blown off. This is where you come if you tried to commit suicide. And the soldiers meeting in this room have serious medical problems, but they're a lot less dramatic. One of them got a blood clot in his leg after he spent months driving cramped supply trucks. Now he can hardly walk.
And it's hard.
What do you guys need most?
Probably understanding from these doctors. We're not here to play games. We're hurt, physically, mentally, or whatever.
Another patient hurt his back when he got thrown around on helicopters. Now he says he can hardly lift any weight. The soldiers say they're afraid they'll get in trouble if they use their names.
Just wake up in the middle of the night in a fetal position, just crying, sweating, getting up hollering, having nightmares. Lights are off and TV's on. You just wake up and you wonder where you're at. You're in like purgatory almost. One minute you're completely emotionally fine. Next minute you're crying because don't know for what.
When these soldiers talk about their symptoms, they could be reading from a military pamphlet about the potential warning signs of PTSD. But they say the hospital staff hasn't made much effort to talk about their emotional problems.
Just besides going over to psychology where they ask you a few basic questions, how much do you drink, do you smoke? I mean, these basic questions they asked us when we came in the military. And I asked my caseworker, I said, hey, I'm having some issues, I need to talk to somebody. And it was like, well, we ain't got time for that. We need to get you out of here.
One of the staff psychiatrists at Walter Reed told me that they interview all the soldiers to try to spot everybody with emotional problems. But he acknowledged that the staff has a heavy caseload. And he said when the patients get discharged and sent back to their military bases, they'll have more trouble getting psychiatric help. The psychiatrist said a lot of bases have a tiny mental health staff, and their main job is to help the next rotation of soldiers get ready to go to Iraq. They don't have much time to help troubled soldiers who've come home. The psychiatrist, like others I talked to in the Army, said he doesn't want to be quoted by name. Eventually, of course, thousands of troops who come home from the war will leave the military, and they'll go back to civilian life. And then they'll be eligible to get mental health care at a veterans medical center. But doctors like Joel Kutnick aren't sure how they can help more vets.
We are overwhelmed by the number of patients that want mental health services. We're saturated.
Kutnick is the only full-time psychiatrist at the VA Medical Clinic in Corpus Christi, Texas. The building sits just off the freeway near the Gulf of Mexico. Kutnick says he's treating so many patients from past wars that he doesn't even know the exact number.
I have been told that I have anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 patients that I'm seeing.
And is that a lot for one psychiatrist?
That's a lot. When I was in private practice, I had an active caseload of 500, and I was really pushing it to see all of those.
Kutnick has a few staff members to help him, and the VA has promised to add another therapist part-time. But Kutnick says they still can't provide anywhere near enough help to the vets who need it most. He says if you're a vet in bad shape, you really should get intensive counseling at least a few times a week, maybe every day, until you get back on your feet. At his clinic, you can see a counselor a few times, and then maybe once a month. Things are better at some VA centers, especially on the East Coast, but mental health specialists in the VA are so worried about the situation in general that they're sounding an official warning. Last month, Tom Horvath and other top psychiatrists descended on the nation's capital from VA medical centers across the country.
What's bugging us is that people who serve their country, that went to combat when a lot of the other people in this country did not go, are not getting the first-class services that they deserve. They're getting better service now than they would have 30 years ago, but nowhere near enough to put them back to real productive lives.
Horvath runs the psychiatry department at the VA Medical Center in Houston. He and his colleagues are part of a national committee that advises the Department of Veterans Affairs. They gathered around a horseshoe table in a hotel banquet room, and they strategized. How can we shake up the system so it's ready for the new generation of vets?
The young troopers that are now coming out from the conflict in Iraq, unless we do something fairly dramatic to improve both the quantity and quality of psych services, they'll be left out.
The committee has discovered that since the mid-1990s, the number of veterans who need psychiatric treatment has gone up, but the budget to treat them has not. This means, in effect, that spending on mental health care has dropped almost 30% when you account for inflation. The budget for substance abuse programs has plunged more than 40%. A lot of clinics have laid off staff. As a result, the committee reports that many centers can't provide, quote, even minimal levels of basic mental health services, unquote.
The mentally ill are not popular. Many people in the community, including legislators and administrators, believe that the mentally ill perhaps are not really ill. With substance abuse, there is the moral opprobrium of, you know, it's their fault. And with the post-traumatic stress disorder patients, there is often a misconception that it is merely, at worst, cowardice.
But wait a minute, you're talking about officials in the Veterans Administration in the year 2004. Some of them look down on veterans who have mental disorders?
Oh, no question about it. Otherwise, how could I explain that in the past 6 or 7 years, medical and surgical funding increased while psychiatric funding declined?
Doctors say the problems might be about to get worse. Federal officials are going to overhaul the veterans' medical system to try to make it more efficient. But when a VA commission released their draft plan a few months ago, public health and veterans groups were stunned. It proposed shutting down more than half a dozen centers around the country that have mental health programs. The commission has retreated somewhat since the outcry. But now the Secretary for Veterans Affairs, Anthony Principi, has to decide what to do. Principi's spokesman said he was unavailable for an interview because he was busy juggling the budget. Daniel Zwerdling, NPR News.